The objects around us, they contain memories. Our sofas know so much about us, or our cups, they know so much. So in that sense, you are who you are with the stuff around you.
Says Hella Jongerius, with whom I'm speaking today for a new episode of our Weltkunst podcast, Was macht die Kunst? Hella Jongerius is one of the most influential designers of our time. Since the 1990s, her work has spanned the realms of design, art and craft. She works with a variety of materials like ceramics, wood or textile. Following its premiere at Vitra Museum in Weil am Rhein, her retrospective Whispering Things will be on view at the Museum of Kunst and Gewerbe in Hamburg from October 23rd until mid-2027. Was macht die Kunst? What is art up to? Liebe Hella Jongerius.
What macht die Kunst? I think it is our oxygen.
You have your show right now at Vitra Design Museum. It's coming up in Hamburg. How does it feel to see your own work exhibited in a museum, looking back onto 30 years of creativity?
That's quite strange, to be honest. I have seen many exhibitions, but never an archive exhibition or 30 years of work. So I walk in through my life and I see 30 years in 5 minutes. So it is a lot because I don't see, of course, only the end results, but I see the times where I created it, with what kind of people did I work, what was the client about, the context, the time resonates on different objects. Where was I in my private life? Where did I have my studio? So it is all this information, all those layers that I see. And so it's quite intense, to be honest. And I was also happy that I was not that much involved in the choice of the objects, because there is much more in the archive. So I let it a bit out of my hands to, I'm too much involved to know how this story could be told.
So you left your archive to Vitra Design Museum a few years ago. So they were able to work with objects, but also with drawings, with correspondences. Were you surprised by the choice that they made?
No, I was not surprised. I was also, of course, involved, but I was surprised to see myself, because it is a kind of chronologic, what I don't like that much if I go to an exhibition. But the first room is about my first 10 years. So when I was in Droog Design, this collaboration with Dutch designers. And in this work, I was doing self-initiated work. I didn't have any clients. And the themes that I touched there, but without any words, just in the making and in the thinking, so my own agenda is still visible now in the work. So the imperfection, the whole thinking on materials, that the materials lead to a certain product and lead our way into a culture or into an archive, this relationship between an object or objects or products that we live with, the misfits, repair, all those topics are still in my work now and are relevant in the world of my profession, and I think in general in the world, still resonating. So that was for me like, whoa, how intuitive I was at that time and young. And if you have the right questions, how they can walk with you for 30 years and resonate each time different and different with different companies or with different museums or in different times. That was for me a surprise. I also thought, I was kind of proud.
Wonderful. Of course, a retrospective like that is a reason in itself to be proud, but to be still happy with the work and its development, of course, this must be a great feeling.
Yeah.
Going back to even before you made objects, Did art and design play a great role in your upbringing when you were a child in the Netherlands? How did you first decide to become a designer?
Well, no, it was not in my upbringing. So I was raised in a farm. My father was a gardener. I grew up in a tomato farm, so very Dutch and very funny for Germans. It was a very simple life in a small village. There was no culture or music, so there was another kind of culture, a simple daily life being in nature. And I didn't have a lot of friends because we lived far away from neighbors. So I didn't know for a long time what to do, but on a certain moment, I met all my friends went to art schools or art academies, and I have chosen to start to be a carpenter. And then on a certain moment, I thought, I don't want to be this technical. So I'd like to go to also be creative. So I was creative as a child because we were all knitting and macrame and all those things. So I knew I had some talent in my hands and knowledge. So then I thought, yeah, art academy is so free. Maybe it's not the way. So I was afraid. So I thought maybe I go to a design school, industrial design. That was something that interested me. And then I applied for this school, and I think it was a good match because I really like the boundaries of my profession, and that you have a practical goal. It has to function. You can also question what is functioning, and I also did that in my work. So I have an artistic way of working. So I'm free. I wander around. I really dive into topics, but the end goal is an object or a project or something that could land in the real world, could function or could give us an idea what a future of an object or of a project could look like. So I think it was a good choice in the end. Yeah.
You were a member of Droch Design. Yeah. Is this a collective that came out of art school? Did you have connections there?
No.
Or how did this come about?
There was the teacher of the Design Academy, Gijs Bakker, with a curator. They founded this collaboration, this platform. So I knew him as a teacher, as a professor. And then they started to find interesting objects and place them together and show them around the world. For 10 years, so there was a very productive time also for me because I only had to design or wander around, finding my own topic, my own language, my handwriting, my questions. And they took the work in the right context with also other interesting work and showed it on platforms in the world. So it was really a huge, I could immediately fly. That was really, I'm thankful for the start, yeah.
And then you started your own firm in Rotterdam, Jongerius Lab.
Yeah.
You had connections already, but was there any difficulty in finding clients and getting lucrative jobs? Or what do you say were the challenges of having your own firm then?
Well, the first in Holland, you have a lot of funding. Mm-hmm. So the first 10 years I had funding also in the time that I was collaborating with Droog Design. And then I always tell young people after 8 years, if you work on your oeuvre and you show who you are, after 8 years, the telephone rings. And then there is somebody who wants a job or have a question for you. So I had my own, the B set that I did, the porcelain set I did with Makkum. That's a porcelain, very old porcelain company in Holland. And they wanted to produce the B set, so an imperfect porcelain tea set. And after that, Meharam, that's an upholstery company in New York, he called me if I could do textile for him, upholstery textile. And at the same time, Fitra called. So I never look myself for jobs because people need to be ready for you. So there's a lot of meetings before somebody calls you. So you have to be on the mood boards for a long time. So I'm on many mood boards and on a certain moment they call you. Yeah, so I was lucky that I have those 10 years building out my own handwriting with the help of funding.
And your work with material seems to me boundless, from ceramics to textile or wood. I find this is also very unique, that there are so many things that you are associated with, so many materials, and still you have your own handwriting. How do you go about a project? You start with a material, or you start with a concept?
I start with a question.
Oh. So I see behind you beautiful vases. That's an example. How do you go about? What was the question for these?
That was the vases that I did in the start of my career. And there I was, I asked a museum in Holland, the Boijmans Museum in Rotterdam, if I could lend old shards, so from the mid ages. If I could make a new object with ears out of the mid ages, so pottery from very long time ago. And I received eight, the ending of a bowl or the bottom of a bowl or an ear. And I started to create pots for it. And the pots are also copied from pots that, you know, an archetypical, I don't need to make new. So I believe in archetypical shapes. So I make those faces and place the ears on it. I had a certain procedure for it, certain way of doing it. And then I had this seven pots. So it was a new way of repairing, or how can you revive the archive of a museum or old charts. And then after that, I took the vase out of this collection, and the vase became my canvas. So I used it for many, many projects, like for textiles as a decorative motif, or these vases I used a lot for color work. So trying to understand glazing and color work for other companies and so on. So it is a kind of canvas, this vase, for me. It started like this repair idea, and this became my own archive, this vase. So I built upon this vase, yeah, to use it as a canvas for my own thinking. Yeah, so it's not easy to say, like, how do you start? So there are many parameters where you think of, like, yeah, why now is, for instance, a question. Why now? I think it's very important that you resonate with the time, that it makes sense with where we are right now. And where do we come from? What was before? So these are questions that I always have. And why this material? So I think these are important questions for me. Yeah.
It's beautiful for me to think that the vase is for you a canvas, because of course, Dutch people are also very famous for flowers and vases, tulips. And I find it beautiful that it's a universal object, a universal vessel, but it has this Dutch connotation too. And for you, it becomes a canvas. So it feels like a full circle in a way.
Yeah. And also that you also question functionality, like this vase, you don't need to use it for flowers. It can have another function. That's also how I see my profession. So functionality is not only using the thing, but also for imagination or for as a canvas. Or so functionality is also questionable of a vase. It only has to contain water, but you have all those varieties. Why, you know? So this is an interesting topic for me here on vases.
Yeah, vases also are in the course of history a status symbol. It can be something super valuable that is also very, very fragile. I think the fragility is a topic that's very much of our times. So a vase actually has a lot of connotations that resonate with us today.
Yeah, and also if you look in museums, or what we have left from the old days is pots. We have tools that are left in archives from very long time ago, and pots, pottery. It's also culture everywhere in the world different. So that is an interesting object. Yeah.
Are you a collector of things?
No.
You have the appreciation for old things, let's say in a museum and old pots in museums, but you don't buy anything.
No. It makes me also happy. I don't, and I think for me also, that's why the show is called Whispering Things. So things around us, objects, they are something too loud. If you have too much, it's too loud. I don't have an empty house. I don't have this modernistic empty house. So I have stuff, but I know it has a weight. So objects have a weight, and I'm careful.
I once read, you are owned by the things that you own. So that, of course, there's a responsibility that comes with objects to care for them, to have space for them.
Yeah, and they
the less you have.
Yeah, the less you have, the less problems you have.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you have something, you buy a problem. Yeah, that's, and also the objects around us, they contain memories. Our sofas know so much about us, or our cups, they know so much. And yeah, so in that sense, you are who you are with the stuff around you.
How does this thought affect your work as a designer who creates more objects?
Yeah, what I find very difficult here is the consumption, and that I use materials maybe for garbage, to throw away. So that's also the reason why I stopped working for industry, because I don't believe that I can add something to this capitalistic system. You know, everything that you make pushes on the earth, on our sources. So I'm very, I don't believe in it. So that I can add something there with where I stand, and also with my moral compass. I think I'm better in research projects. What could a craft, like weaving, what could it bring for a future? How can I look at this craft and then dive deeper? So not, and don't come in the end with an object that has to be sold, because then you have to make compromises, and also, use materials and sources that poison the world. So, but I like to work deeper and research for a longer time, and then show it in a museum and communicate with people and not with consumers. And that's for me now a more interesting field. So I stopped working for industry now, like 8 or 10 years. And I'm more into this research projects. Yeah.
You said you're not working with these big companies anymore, but looking back, of course, this is was in many cases a very fruitful production. I'm thinking of Nymphenburg porcelain with animals sitting on plates that are really lovely, and with furniture for KLM, the airline, and Camper and IKEA. So you have had amazing collaborations, but now you concentrate on your own works, and increasingly with animals. So how come animals play such a big role in your work right now?
Yeah, so animals are in my oeuvre since the beginning. Start is the Nymphenburg project. So I was asked to come to the company in Munich, and they have a beautiful, beautiful old company. And there were cupboards with animals that nobody wanted to buy, because, you know, who wants to have this little small thingy? That was from the early days, but they were beautifully made. So I took them out of the cupboard and placed them in a new surrounding. I made a bowl, and they're in the middle, and they got a new decoration over it. So, and after that, I did props for Vitra. So office pets. Can I make, instead of an office chair, an office pet? And then I made a frog table. So a huge frog on a corner of a table in wood, just to give to have him on the eye level, an animal, a voiceless animal on an eye level, give them a voice, a place at the table. And I did animals for IKEA and whatever. But for me, animals, they communicate. They are in our myth, in fairy tales. We recognize ourselves in an animal. They communicate, and they're funny. You know, they're also funny. And now I make, and so I, for Woven Cosmos, I did the show in Gropius Bau Museum in Berlin. And there I created also animals, and I looked at my animals and I thought, yeah, you know, they're also happy. And so I started to clay pottery, make them by hand. And then they started to be very angry. You know, now I made those group of angry animals because, you know, how they are treated in the world, and not only the animals, but they all have women's names, a setback for feminism, to give them a voice, to show their emotion. So angriness is in the air all around in the world, not only the victims, but also the bullies. So I wanted to express this angriness. That's why these last animals are angry. Yeah.
Are they unique pieces, or is there other editions?
Yeah, they are unique. And I did for Vitra a big fountain with three angry sharks, a shark fountain, also in front of the museum, also to show. So they are the three gratien, the three graces. Joy, beauty, and abundance, the values that we are losing, so the softer values. And I wanted to express this in front of this museum. So, yeah, they're one-offs, yeah, for now. You never know, whatever.
Is the fountain also traveling to Hamburg?
No, the fountain is forever.
So. Oh, the fountain stays there forever. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, in front of the Geary building. This is a super combination. Yeah,
I saw vases that also reminded me of this old Dutch tradition that you don't only have one opening in a vase, but you have little ones also where single flowers could potentially go. Of course, I doubt that you would put flowers into the shark's crevices, but there is this playful allusion to this tradition. And then, of course, they look very contemporary, very angry, very animated, and very communicative in a way. So normally a vase doesn't talk to you, but these animals really have something to say, and not just to whisper.
No, they don't whisper. They're loud.
Yeah. So the title of the show, Whispering Things, implies that objects talk to you. How would you say, let's say today, did any object talk to you already?
Yeah, this morning I was so happy because my favorite cup was not in a dishwasher. So so I'm very happy. So in that way, objects communicate. We all have a favorite cup. We all have things in our house that are presents from people that you still know. Oh, I got this on this occasion from this and this person. Some objects are inherited from your parents, some you bought yourself, or on a holiday, or so this layer of how did they appear in your house, then the layer of do they function? Some are not functioning, but they're still attractive, or they still give you something. Then the layer of the culture or the making. How do they get old? How is the material evolving? In which culture is it made? What crafts? And then the memories, like, oh yeah, with Christmas, you know, that we did, or this was broken, or look at this stain on my sofa. Oh, scheisse. But, you know, so there is all those layers in our objects makes us be aware of the object and maybe keep them a bit longer, take care of them, clean them, repair them, give a sofa a new upholstery and not throw it away. So it's a way of thinking on consumerism and be aware that you're not alone. You're surrounded in good company. And it's also your identity, and it's also privacy. What is privacy? Does it need to be clean? Are you a clean person? Are you only at home in the evening? Do you see your life only with lights and not with daily light? Are your children destroying your stuff? Well, anyway, so there is so much richness, so many stories in our objects. And that's what I try to address in Whispering Things.
It's a very poetic title, and I also like how the chapters are named of the chapters of your exhibition. One is called Dirty Hands. It feels like a motivation to get your hands dirty.
Yes, so that was always my method from the start, to make the things, to study with my hands and with many hands in my studio. If you only keep the knowledge from your head, it's just running in a circle. And in the hands is a certain knowledge that communicates with materials, with the making. And I think in the hands, the smart hands, if they communicate with a head, with a computer, then you come in a field of the unexpected. So they think out of the box, the hands think out of the box. And that's why I think it's very important. Also, you have the tactility, and on a certain moment, if you work for a longer time with your hands, weavers, potters, but also creating things in little maquettes or paper models, whatever. I see it in my studio. Some are very knowledgeable. They are so, so super intelligent with their hands. And some things are really ugly, and you know, you get lost in whatever kind of strangeness. But here there's also, then you also combine things. And so that's why I think the knowledge of our hands is very important. Yeah.
Humor seems to play a role in your works, sometimes by combining techniques, sometimes by giving something a funny face, even. I mean, just speaking about your animals. And with the techniques, I'm thinking of you had a plate that was stitched. You had a stitching on it, so that's... Yeah. It seems to not make sense, because the materials normally you cannot stitch on a plate. So how big a role does humor play in your work, you think?
It's very funny that you say that stitching on a plate, that doesn't make sense for functionality. But if you look at it with an art glass on, you would never say that, you know. So I don't say it's art, but there are many things like that in art done. So if you look at Merit Oppenheim with the fur cup, you know, so you don't ask this question. So I am in between art and design. And sometimes I flip over to the other side or the one side. And I think that's also the power, that I'm not afraid to be in a nowhere's land. And I'm sometimes going over a border. That's also part of the research, like where I don't care where I am, what label I have. But it's funny that the outside world is always looking through a certain glass.
I find humor can play a role in art and in design. And I think there's not a clear border between art and design.
No.
I think there is a, I wouldn't say a gray area. It's more like a rainbow area.
Yes, something like that. I think you have to take yourself not that serious, and also not in objects. And it's also a way of communicating. So I always, also for industry, sometimes you work for years to end up with an object that can be sold on the market, on the stream, on a good price, you know. And in the end of this whole long trip, I click something different that nobody expected, like the buttons on the polder sofa. So to give it oxygen again, to have some smile or give it humanity, I think that's important, that we recognize ourselves. And your humor helps, and something that is beautiful is also communicating, and something that is ugly is also very good in communicating. So it's also who I am, I think, you know. Yeah.
What are you working on right now?
Ah, big secret. So it's a big secret, but I'm working on it since 3 years. And it will be, the opening is on the 11th of December. And I'm still not allowed to talk about it, but it is a 3D woven object that can move. And I make 10 of them, and they really will function. So that's the only thing I can say. It's for a big American museum. So that's what is around me, yeah.
You also have taught at universities in Berlin, Weißensee, Hohe Kunsthochschule Weißensee, and in Eindhoven. What is advice you give to young designers and who want to enter your field?
Yeah, it is a very interesting moment right now, because there's only one question: how to save the world, how to save the earth. So I think this one question we all know, and that's important to rethink our profession again, how to use materials, how to make products that can be repaired. Yeah, how to take care of our resources and how to think on consumerism, on capitalism. So in that sense, it's very easy to be a designer. The solution is difficult, of course, but that's also challenging and interesting. So I think for a designer, find your passion in these huge questions, because they are can also give you a setback. Like, I can't have this huge problem on my plate, I have no clue. But if you have your own passion or your own interest, and find people, build communities, you know, don't be it, do it alone, so that you come with a bigger force than you yourself and your own thingies. So I think that's important for young people.
If you could travel in time, where and to what period would you go?
I think then I would like to go to the future. I would like to see the next millennium.
What is your most important tool?
A measuring tape.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
A cat.
What game do you like to play?
Bingo.
What's your favorite color?
I don't have one.
Do you have a recurring dream?
Yeah, that I'm entering a house. It's going on with rooms, so I never get a clue where I am.
Do you listen to music when you work?
No.
What topic would you like to see in an entire issue of Weltkunst?
Solar energy.
Can you share a wisdom?
It's in Dutch, so I have to translate. Het het komt nooit op orde. So there's never an order in things.
Thank you very, very much. And I look forward to December to seeing the exhibition in Hamburg. Weltkunst podcast Was macht die Kunst is supported by Volkswagen Group Culture. The Volkswagen Group Art for All initiative offers free admission to the Neue Nationalgalerie in Berlin on the first Thursday of every month from 4 to 8 p.m. Numerous programs at Hamburger Bahnhof, Nationalgalerie der Gegenwart in Berlin, and free admission to the Kunstmuseum Wolfsburg on the last Wednesday of every month from 4 p.m. on. Additionally, Volkswagen Group Art for All supports Tide Tight to mark the 40th anniversary of Kunsthalle Emden.